Welcome to the Red Phone Zone. This is going to be issue number 54. I am your host, Aaron.
I am your host, Ethan.
And who do we have with us tonight, Ethan?
We have Mr. Matt Forbeck with us, game designer and novelist extraordinaire. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing excellent, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being on the show.
Well, if you've ever heard the show before, then you would know that we are a weekly podcast, a Geekcast. It's when we talk about... pretty much we have an ongoing discussion right now about movie genres. Our little... I guess you want our shtick is we have on our guest host and we allow them to pick the movie genre that we talk about. And tonight, Chris has chosen the James Bond film genre. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a discussion about that, and we're going to go through our top six list of our top six favorite of the James Bond films. But before we do any of that, we have a little segment we like to call Geekly Happenings. It's when we talk about news that's relevant to us geeks. What's going on in the news this week, Ethan?
Well, I'll open up with the news we hate, and that, well, okay, we don't really hate, we don't care. It's Tom Cruise, is now a lock for the Joseph Kaczynski sci-fi project Oblivion, which is also unofficially moved to Universal Deadline reports, rumored for both the studio and the star last month. Oblivion, which has also been listed under the title Horizons, takes place in a future where humanity lives in the clouds thanks to an irradiated Earth. When the lead character, or a repairman named Jack, J-A-K, finds a woman in a crashed ship, his whole world view comes into question, and Kaczynski made his directing debut last year with Tron Legacy. He's also still expected to work with Disney on a remake of the studio's The Black Hole. Production on Oblivion is said to start in October with a $100 million budget and aiming for a PG-13 rating. So I really enjoyed Tron Legacy.
I did too. I mean, I did too. For the most part, I don't like Tom Cruise. I don't have any vile hatred in me for him, mm-hmm. but I lean towards dislike. I mean, sometimes he does good movies.
Yeah, I love Minority Report.
Sure, sure. I like Collateral. So I mean,
Collateral, he is really good in Collateral.
Yeah,
that's
so
true.
He makes some good movies sometimes. So that's... Well, that's news.
Yeah, yeah. There's a Carrie remake moving forward at...
Why?
God only knows. A new version of Carrie, but said to be less of a remake of the Brian De Palma film and more of a readaptation of the original text, whatever that's supposed to mean. No one's attached to star or direct yet, but it's just in development, I guess.
Okay. See, I just keep going back to this. I mean, why remake movies that have been done well before? I mean, the original Carrie's
good. No, it's not remake anymore. Apparently, it's rebooting.
No, even still. Sometimes reboots go well.
So the real question is when are we going to reboot Red Phone Zone?
Recast it.
Done. Yeah, that'd be great.
And we'll shoot it in 3D. It'll be amazing.
Yes, yeah, so it'll come at you in 3D.
3D audio. I don't even want to think what 3D audio would look like.
Vin Diesel has lined up a project at MGM called The Machine. The film from Night at the Museum writers Robert Ben Garant and Thomas Lennon is officially described by MGM as follows. Diesel will play a human-like machine created in secrecy by the Pentagon as the world's first true ultimate weapon. 20 years after the project was buried and decommissioned for reasons unknown, the machine is discovered by a kid who befriends him. When the government learns it has been reactivated, the machine must protect the family harboring him. In addition to starring, Diesel is set to produce the project, and as he has with several prior films. Kind of sounds like The Iron Giant to me, but, you know.
I liked The Iron Giant.
The Iron Giant was good.
It was awesome.
And The Iron Giant was Vin Diesel.
Yeah, it was.
Oddly enough.
I don't think he produced it, but he was the voice of The Iron Giant.
Yes, yes.
So, that was a great movie. I don't care about Vin Diesel. I mean,
I like the guy.
Hey. I just don't, you know. I mean, he neither offends nor pleases me.
No, I have no problem with the guy.
Cool.
Stephen Fry has been confirmed for The Hobbit.
I saw that, and he is the Lord of Rivertown.
Yeah, he's the Master of Lake Town.
Whatever. That's what I said. Edit that. Fix it, Chad. Yes. Sound man, Chad.
Peter Jackson also has said that Ryan Gage will play Alfred, while
the butler.
Yes, Alfred the Butler in the new Batman.
Right on.
While Conan Stevens is set to play an orc called Azog.
Azog?
I
remember
no idea
Azog.
Who Ryan Gage or Conan Stevens
Me neither.
Are, but, you know, there you go.
And how's my campaign going for me playing Bard?
It is ongoing.
It is ongoing, and we will get back to you
shortly. We need to get those headshots and a demo tape.
Yeah, yeah.
And we better hurry because, you know, they are, you know, filming the movie.
Are they filming them back to back?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I better get moving on that, huh?
Better get your ass in gear there,
man. It's probably going to be Orlando Bloom. They said that he's going to be in the movie. I don't know if they said he's going to be Legolas. And goddamn it, if he plays somebody shooting a bow in history, it's going to be Orlando Bloom, apparently.
And we've talked about the next Wolverine movie, The Wolverine.
We have.
And how
at length.
And how Darren Aronofsky left the project. Thank you.
I don't.
Well, apparently now they've got a short list for directors.
It reads like the bullshit short list of actresses for Catwoman.
Yeah. Oh, well, it also reads like the bullshit shortlist for Superman, the Superman director, you know?
Yeah.
According to the list, it's Jose Padilla, who did Elite Squad and is doing the upcoming RoboCop reboot, and I think he should be fired into the sun just for that.
Mm-hmm.
And the just-announced Tri-Border, whatever that might be. Doug Liman from Mr. and Mrs. Smith and The Bourne Identity. Antoine Fuqua from Training Day and Brooklyn's Finest. Mark Romanek from 1 Hour Photo and Never Let Me Go. Justin Lin, who apparently is attached to direct everything. Gavin O'Connor from Miracle, Pride, and Glory. James Mangold from Walk the Line and 310 to Yuma. And Gary Shore, who's primarily done television commercials.
Mm-hmm.
I would say sort of there's a few in here that pop out as some serious considerations to me. I mean, is anyone on that list you'd like to see directing Wolverine?
Nah, I don't care. I mean, I am one of the few that like the X-Men Origin Wolverine. I enjoyed it, but I just don't care about the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Justin Lin, was he the only director I'd heard of out of all those?
Oh no, Anton Fuqua.
Yeah.
He's about the only one I could see probably doing a good Wolverine.
Did he do? Yeah.
He did Training Day.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's hit and miss. But
I thought I heard Gore Verbinski somehow attached to this.
Wouldn't surprise me. Writer Christopher McQuarrie's penned the script for Wolverine, which is said to have a heavy focus on Japan. Leading man Hugh Jackman recently commented to ComingSoon.net about the project's lack of a director and whether or not the film would still shoot in Japan following the tsunami-related crisis the nation has been facing since earlier this year. He said, quote, "We need to find another director, and once we've found that, we'll be able to know," Jackman said. "It's too early to call on Japan. I'm not sure where they're at, so now we're finding another director. But Fox is very anxious to make the movie, and we're moving ahead full steam to find another director."
If let's pretend that X-Men or First Class tanks. Mm-hmm. Think it'll kill this movie?
No.
You don't?
I don't. Not at all. Because Wolverine made money, so.
Okay. I mean, do you think it would put it off at all?
I don't think so. I think, if anything, it would
halt, just, man,
you know.
This project really seemed to lose a lot of steam when it lost Aronofsky. Mm-hmm.
No, I think if X-Men First Class does poorly, I think the only thing that'll do is push up an X-Men 4, honestly.
Push out an X-Men 4.
Yeah,
okay,
I think
gotcha.
That'll make them go back to going to the, mm-hmm. what people have been seeing and mm-hmm. relatively yeah, liking.
Well. Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. We got our first look at Tom Hardy as Bane.
We did. I liked the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I mean I liked the photograph. I liked the way it was shot. It's creepy looking and mm-hmm. cool photograph.
It gives away who he is, but not, you know, pretty much nothing else.
There's no picture of him breaking Bane or Batman's back over his knee or anything.
Yeah.
But a lot of back knee.
Uh-huh.
A lot of back knee.
Uh-huh.
Looks big.
Yeah.
Huge, scary.
I think he ate Christian Bale or something.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah, they hired him for the protein.
Yes.
He got big, and I like the picture. To me, the bigger news and all that was the launch of the viral marketing campaign.
The launch of the big viral. Well, because this was very reminiscent of the Joker picture that first
very much
came
so,
out, so.
But it, man, this took. 45 minutes to get unveiled. It took a week, I think, for the Joker to mm-hmm. get unveiled.
Well, someone also scooped it and found it.
Well, they did scoop it, but it also got unlocked in like 45 minutes. By the time I found the story and I woke up late that day, it was unlocked already.
I thought it was pretty cool, the whole
Yeah, you go to
the, as you follow it, the Twitter images
that is
uncovered
cool.
It was kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of neat because like the way that it worked out is you went to thedarkknightrises.com and it's nothing but a black screen, and said black screen you can hear chanting in the mm-hmm. background, and it's the way that people ended up finding out that about this Bane photo. Here, follow me here. It's a long way. But the way they found it is somebody downloaded the audio file, uh-huh. and then they stuck it into a audio editing program, and they converted it to a waveform file. Uh-huh. And in the waveform file, there was a hidden Twitter feed.
Did they reverse it or anything, or it was just...
No.
No, okay.
No. No, I was when I first heard about this, I'm like, good God, these people don't have lives if they figured it out that quickly. And the way I realized now, thinking about the way that somebody figured it out, was they downloaded it because the chanting is not very coherent, and it could just as easily be somebody speaking backwards. And I think that what they did is they loaded it into a program to play it backwards, and they just saw it there, went to the Twitter feed. You go to that Twitter feed, every time that you retweet it, it unlocks a pixel, and mm-hmm. that's where the photo came from. But yeah, that's I mean, obviously I'm very excited about The Dark Knight Rises. Could be a great movie.
The only thing I've got really here is Schwarzenegger has halted all of his acting projects for obvious reasons.
Ask if that was going to happen, or did I just think that to myself?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't listen to you. So
I don't listen to me either. So
good for Schwarzenegger. We won't see Governator anytime soon.
Couldn't care less. Backtrack a little bit to Dark Knight Rises. There were three more names added to the cast mm-hmm. list. They were Tom Conti, Matthew Modine, and I don't remember the name of the girl, but the girl that was
they
in...
They added two more today.
Did they?
Or the other day. It's no one that...
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this movie's fully underway and should be good.
Mm-hmm.
Should be good. I do have a little thing that I noticed, and... it'll be all nice and convenient and stuff, but it was a quote from Michael Fassbender that he was, and I don't know where this information is coming from, but people are saying that he is favored to take over the role of James Bond.
Oh, yeah?
And so much as, he said, obviously, I'm flattered because, he hasn't done any hugely... I mean, obviously, he's going to be Magneto in X-Men First Class, but he hasn't done any real huge roles. And obviously, he would like to do something as large as James Bond, but he also said that he does not want to see Daniel Craig walk away at this point because he's really liked what he's been doing. So,
well, they've already announced, basically that they're doing another two. And so I would assume that would also... I would assume that means Daniel Craig's on board for at least two more. So
I didn't get out the contract itself, but I was reading about his contract today. And the contract was when he did Casino Royale, it was one with an option of a second.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he signed... When he said he would do Quantum of Solace, he did... the second one with an option of a second.
Okay, so he's basically playing his cards.
He could get out if he wanted to, but
that's cool.
He doesn't really come across as wanting out, and I don't want him out.
No, he's great.
Myself, I really enjoy him.
We'll talk about that more, I'm sure.
But yeah, that...
We didn't mention the Muppets trailer.
There was a Muppets trailer.
And it was awesome.
We saw it when we saw Pirates 4.
I got five trailers came out this last week, and the Muppets is by far the coolest. Close to the new Green Lantern one, but
I like the new Green Lantern trailer, but I'm so past thinking
although,
that's awesome.
We did see the full trailer for Torchwood Miracle Day did show up online.
I didn't see that.
That
I saw
awesome.
I saw the full trailer for
the Smurfs.
No, I didn't see that. I saw that came out, but I didn't watch it. No, for the Real Steel.
Oh God!
I was all like, that has a plot.
Uh-huh.
I was really surprised about that. I mean, a plot beyond robots beating each other up.
Ending on some sad note, Randy Savage died.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah. Macho Man Randy Savage stepping into
Savage
a Slim Jim and all that good stuff.
Bonesaw from Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, I guess we'll miss you, Randy Savage.
Sure. I don't see why not.
Wrestler from my childhood. What can I say?
Mine too, but I didn't really watch a whole lot of wrestling as a kid. I think I watched it for like 4 months when I was like 20, and that was because of you. Uh-huh. But yeah.
That's so all I got.
It's sad. Nobody should ever die.
No. That's all I got.
Speaking of, well, this is a, man, that's a bad way to segue into that. But you know what Friday is?
No, what is Friday?
May 27th. It's going to be Christopher Lee's 89th birthday.
Sir Christopher fucking Lee's birthday. Very nice.
It'll be his 89th birthday. I was actually just thinking about that today, and I don't even know how it came up.
It's so nice of them to give him Kung Fu Panda 2 for his birthday.
Yeah. I bet he's going to be the first in line, sleeping out in front of the theater on his knapsacks and all that. Yeah.
Yep, totally.
Yeah.
Scowling at people as they walk by.
And they all die.
First in line.
Yes.
And then they all run away scared.
I think he could probably beat all those people with one arm tied behind.
Really, all he has to do is show up at the theater and just, you know, walk to the front of the line and go, I am first in line. And everyone runs screaming. So, mm-hmm. Because, well, it's Christopher, you know, fucking Lee.
Because I'm Christopher fucking Lee. But, yeah. So, Christopher fucking Lee was in James Bond movies, huh?
Yes,
well,
he was.
Movie.
He was in a movie. And he was almost Dr. No.
He was almost Dr. No. But, yeah, now is when we talk about James Bond, and it is time for Mr. Matt to talk. Matt, why did you decide that you wanted to talk about the James Bond movies out of all the genres out there?
Because I love James Bond movies. I grew up watching spy movies as a kid. When I was a kid, it was the Roger Moore period, which was not exactly the greatest James Bond period, right?
Roger Moore's the one I grew up with too, and so he
I like him a lot.
I have a soft spot in my heart for Roger Moore.
I like Roger Moore a lot.
But I think really quick though, I mean, you mentioned spy movies, but James Bond movies are obviously, we're talking James Bond as a genre, and it is sort of its own thing.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's completely different from, you know, from the typical spy.
You say
fare.
I'm going to go see this spy film or this thriller. I'm going to go see a James Bond movie. It's something totally different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, depending
on the
movie.
Playboy thing, the whole Secret Service thing, the whole over-the-top beginning that just lets you know it's ridiculous from the first reel.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff really builds into it, you know. It's nothing like The Bourne Identity or anything like that, or Marathon Man. Mm-hmm. You want to go back to the era of the
King
Kong.
Yeah.
But it's still good quality stuff. I mean, the thing about James Bond is you have to be able to turn off a certain part of your brain and say, yeah, it's ridiculous, but I'm going to go with it. You know, it's really a modern-day fantasy in a lot of ways, more than it is a spy thriller.
One of the things I think is interesting about the James Bond genre, and I feel very comfortable calling it its own genre, is that, you know, we have, you know, 22 official films and, you know, two that are unofficial and TV and books and so on and so forth. And really, you have like such like a run of the gauntlet, you know, from the intriguing spy movie, like, you know, I don't know, Dr. No or whatever, you know, to like the absolutely ridiculous, you know, something like, you know, Die Another Day or something, something along those lines.
Sure.
World's Not Enough. I mean, you know, there's really something for everybody. I mean, like, if you like any kind of spy movie, I think that in those 24 movies, it's been covered.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think James Bond, the James Bond movies really have run that gamut of being these, going from serious spy movie to a bit campy to back to being a serious spy movie to being action films to being all this. But they are. They are in and of themselves, you know. James Bond is, it's not just, its impact on film is obvious. I mean, James Bond came out, what was it, Dr. No, was 1962, you know, and it was obviously a big deal. It came out and,
well,
it spawned 24 sequels, you know.
It did, but, you know, they didn't really take off until Goldfinger.
Goldfinger, right.
I mean, like, and it was, Diamonds Are Forever follows Goldfinger.
Thunderball
was the Thunderball is like the most successful in inflated dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, it made a ton of money, and I think it's responsible for a whole bunch of these sequels that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I you know, my love of James Bond is quite documented on the show. I mean, our 007 episode, issue number 7 was our James Bond episode.
It was.
Talked a bit about our favorite Bonds. And I think James Bond just does a great job of going for, it's been going on now for almost 50 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm excited to see the next one. I'm excited, with how the movies have evolved over the course and really their influence on not only other films, but like literature, comic books. I mean, when you think of a spy movie, no longer really do you think of James Bond, but it's starting to sort of, with the new Daniel Craig, it's starting to become that way again.
Yeah.
But for a while there, it was like you didn't consider James Bond a spy movie. It was just a James Bond movie.
It was an action movie.
Yeah, yeah. And but I think that's just the versatility and of the character of the films. And
they can be a lot of fun and they can be awful. I mean, we have all those in here.
Yeah,
all
of them. You go from both ends of the spectrum to like, wow, this movie is awesome, to wow, this movie is terrifyingly bad.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the James Bond movies is they're always brave in some way. I mean, they're not afraid to be ridiculous or to reach as far as they can in any one direction, right? And they reach in different directions a lot of the time, but they're always just insane in some way, right? And that's one of the great things about them is when you sit down to them, you know the formula by now. You know what you're going to get, but you don't know how they're going to pull off the formula, right? The screenwriters, the actors, the directors, they all know what's expected of them, and they get to play with those different genres and the tropes and come up with something hopefully just as entertaining, but a little bit fresh every time, too.
Sure. Yeah, and really, I think that's James Bond to us. I mean, it's gone from, the more serious tone of Sean Connery to the more campy tone of Roger Moore, back to the serious tone of Daniel Craig. But, I mean, it's in a different tone now. I mean, obviously, it's evolved with the times, and they've updated the character, and I mean, there's not a lot of fictional characters you can say that with, where they've done multiple movies and, you know, they've updated him. You know, I mean, I guess Godzilla, but, you know, James Bond and Godzilla right there.
Well, I mean, the ones that you see that do that are really comic book movies, right? You've seen a lot of comic book characters get updated, not only in the comic books, but in films over the years. In that sense, James Bond is a comic book character. I mean, he's got that iconic feel about him. His costume is the tuxedo, essentially. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just the super badass spy, but as a hero. And you can see how he just plays through that. He never ages. He's always doing the same kind of stuff. As a character, he really never develops a whole lot. He has certain bits that develop. But then, you know, the next time you see him, he might have reset all those, and you don't know who the hell you're dealing with again. So in that sense, he really is a comic book character as opposed to a more serious literature character.
And he's
okay. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and he's a literature character that's been translated into film and then has pretty much become a comic book, quote-unquote, character from that. Which is sort of an interesting reverse transition type of thing.
Rob Claus has got this theory that he's been pushing called, he's got a new anthology coming out this year called The New Hero. But he says there's this regular character arc that you have in stories where the character starts out, he has a crisis of some sort, and then the character develops, right? And that's what people are really interested in seeing in a lot of Hollywood films these days. That's not what, or the ones that win Oscars, that's what you see as character development, right?
Sure.
But Robin says there's also the iconic hero that is himself, knows who he is, and never changes, but actually changes the world around him by sticking to who he is, right?
Yeah.
And it's a different way of looking at heroes and characters. There are these iconic people like Batman or Sherlock Holmes or James Bond, right? And Robin's actually going to do an anthology where he invited a whole bunch of different writers to come up with their own iconic heroes and show just how this can work in any kind of a bigger fun story they can do.
Yeah, and he is a unique hero in that sense, really. That you have one thing I notice in a lot of movies nowadays is you have heroes that are just so confident in their abilities that they're pretty much untouchable.
Yeah.
That's everybody's fun in and Superman. Of itself. You know, I can enjoy a movie like that.
Sure.
But James Bond has gone from being the guy who's confident in his own abilities, to being troubled and being, having flaws and angsty, and then going to, I'm happy-go-lucky, I'm still invincible, I'm awesome, to being I am an action god, to being back to being this conflicted character. It's just fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually a really interesting place to be in, having seen all of these so far, as opposed to, sitting back there, 1965 or whatever, and only seen a couple of them. It is fun to see, like, this entire story arc, as it were. Mm-hmm. So it's an awful lot of fun, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. And, I mean, there's still James Bond novels being written that have nothing to do with the films, too.
Oh, right.
I mean, Raymond Benson wrote a whole bunch of them. There's new guys are writing them nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
It's a character that's going to be with us for probably ever at this point. Until all of us are dead and gone.
Yeah.
That's kind of comforting. I mean, he's a great character. They do wonderful things with him, and they reinvent him for every generation and every era, really, that comes around. And that's very cool. He's got that iconic core that's the base of him that we all recognize, but you can always come up with riffs on that fit with whatever the current day is.
Yeah, yeah. And he's had, you know, he's gone from books to movies, then into an animated series with James Bond Jr., comic
video
books,
games.
Video games.
Yeah. There's the James Bond Jr. cartoon. There's I actually worked on a James Bond collectible card game that my college roommate Brian Winter developed for Heartbreaker Hobbies way back in the mid-90s.
And did it never see the light of day?
It actually sold pretty well. I think they came out with an expansion or two.
I never remember seeing that. Man, I may have to track some of that down.
This is a long time ago, but it was a lot of fun.
Because it was also
it was a good excuse for me to watch movies I loved again.
Yeah, it was also a Victory Games RPG. I remember that.
Exactly.
I think it was Victory Games.
That was a Greg Gordon design.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg is one of the great all-time role-playing game designers ever.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it anymore, but back in the day, he was fantastic.
All righty. Well, I think are we ready to go into our top six, our top 10? What are we calling it now?
sure, top six. Why not?
We are back, and today, obviously, we're going to be talking some our top 10 James Bond movies of all time. So I guess I will take it away with my number six. My number six movie on the list is the original. It's actually the 1962 Dr. No, directed by Terrence Young, the one that started it all, I suppose. It has all of the it has almost all of the flavors in it and the ingredients in it that that always remind us of what James Bond is. It has everything except the gadgets and the fancy car, but it does have it's a solid spy story. You have the over top villain, and really the movie's become so such an iconic part of pop culture that, you know, you have the villain with the metal hands is the villain with the metal hands and Dr. No and the radiation suits running around. I mean, it's all parodied in Austin Powers, obviously. But it shows Bond possibly one of the best versions of Bond from the books, because in the books, I mean, Bond is a ruthless bastard, and in the movie Dr. No, Bond is a ruthless bastard. I sort of point to the part where he waits for the guy to come in and try to kill him in bed after he's had his way with the secretary, and he instead sits back, waits for the guy to come in, then shoots him several times, then shoots him several more times when he's on the ground. Yeah, so Dr. No, some great work by, obviously Sean Connery, the original, the best, the wonderful. 1962 Dr. No. Aaron, any comments on that?
Only thing I particularly liked about Dr. No was Dr. No. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it was also, obviously a very new franchise. It was a very new series, mm-hmm. and so it's still figuring itself out.
Right.
So it didn't have the. It didn't have the opening sequences that we're used to. Did it have the gun barrel? I don't believe it even had the gun barrel. But, it was still a franchise that was still figuring itself out.
See, I think it did at the very beginning.
It might have, but it definitely did not have the opening title sequences that we're getting used to. But, it didn't even have Q in it. Well, it didn't have Desmond Llewellyn in it.
Right.
It did have Q, but it was played by...
Q Branch.
Yeah, it was played by someone else. And
he comes in and gives him the... replaces his Beretta mm-hmm. with the Walther PPK. And I think it's in the next movie that Desmond Llewellyn is in, I believe.
Yeah, he comes he comes on with From Russia with Love, and he's mm-hmm. known as... I don't remember, Mr. Boothroyd or something like that. I can't remember off the top of my head. Mr. Boothroyd, and then he becomes, Q, and in his final appearance is referred to as the Quartermaster, which is what the Q stands for. So mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun. It's a good movie. I liked Dr. No himself, and it's that over the top megalomaniacal villain that we mm-hmm. talked about so many times back on issue 7. But he's fun, and you can't get too mad at the originator of such a thing.
Sure.
But, I mean, it's a worthy choice for your number 6. Mm-hmm. So
sure. What is what's your number 6, Matt?
Goldfinger. Just a great film. I think it was a big turning point in the series. I also think that Ulrich Goldfinger is one of the great baddies.
Oh yeah. He pretty much set the bar
just got
for
some great lines in it.
Oh yeah, he pretty much set the bar and sort of set the standard for what people consider to be a Bond villain. It's pretty much they think Goldfinger.
Exactly. I mean, the guy has him strapped down to a table, mm-hmm. and they're trying to slice him in half, starting at his crotch with this huge laser.
Uh-huh.
And he says, "Do you expect me to talk? No, Mr. Bond. I expect you to die. That's perfect.
Yes, it's that sort of." Sets them apart from other movie villains. It's that panache and that sort of suave. Yes, I'm smarter than you. I'm better than you, and I'm going to put you through this elaborate death trap just because I can. But
exactly.
And that one is like, no, I'm just going to watch you die.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the only times we ever see Bond really scared. Mm-hmm. Is right then actually with Goldfinger. Plus, I mean, Goldfinger also brought us. The quintessential James Bond henchman in Odd Job. So,
mm-hmm.
I love Goldfinger. It's actually my number 2 on my list. I love that movie. It's 1964.
It's my number 7.
It's a great movie. Great, great movie. One of my all-time favorites. Well, Aaron, what's have you figured out your number 6 yet?
I figured out my number 6. I was trying to figure out my 9 and 10. I'll make that up when I get to it. My number 6 is one that I don't particularly like, but it is Die Another Day. And I picked that one because it is, in my opinion, one of the more fun, over-the-top
sure.
James Bond cartoon movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, I had a really fun villain mm-hmm. in was it Zhao, the guy with the diamonds on his face. He was fun. He actually had a car duel, for the first time when he had these big old tricked out mm-hmm. cars, throughout the course of the series.
Yeah.
You had a sword fight in the middle of a James Bond movie, which is weird, but
yeah.
it was
yeah.
still fun to see.
I love it. I like that one a lot.
I think it's fun. But I think that it's everything that necessitated the reboot of the franchise after that point because it just got so ridiculous.
Just a bit over the top.
But at the same time, it was a fun ridiculous because if I remember right, that was the 20th one, and they threw all kinds of homages to the originals, the predecessors,
mm-hmm.
and so that was really cool to see. It was also, I think I just said so, but it was Q's last.
John Cleese's first official run as Q,
and Desmond Llewellyn's final
Yeah, and in that scene, well, no, Desmond Lowe's died before they did the movie. They only appeared in The World Is Not Enough.
Okay, yeah.
And okay. In
I liked that scene then, and I didn't realize I liked a scene in The World's Not Enough.
I know.
Huh. I liked that. I liked his
final
scene.
It was otherwise an awful movie.
Yeah, I agree.
With Dying of the Day, the scene with John Cleese, I mean, and it's actually at the start of that scene, Bond calls him Quartermaster.
Right.
And it isn't until the end of the scene where Bond actually accepts him and calls him Q.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. It was fun.
And little nods to the other movies. You see the alligator up on the wall.
Yeah, the diamonds and, you know, just so many throwbacks to the older
movies. Hands him the watches. How many is this? Oh, this will be your 20th.
It's
your 20th, yes.
Yeah,
stuff like that's great.
And because that's what they're going for, I'm able to, you know, enjoy it for what it is.
Sure.
And, you know, it's obviously, you know, it's not exactly a scathing expose on the human condition or anything, but it was fun to watch. Yeah, so
Didn't make my list, but I do love that one. That is one of the ones I really do enjoy. And Matt actually said it some about it at the beginning of this whole thing is part of these movies is you turn off a part of your brain to enjoy them.
Yeah.
And that one is definitely, you know, yeah, you can pick it apart and whatnot, but turn off your brain. It's still an enjoyable, fun Bond flick, you know?
And that was one of the only ones toward the opening sequence, the title sequence, the song, actually perpetuated the plot.
Yes.
Wasn't that the one where they're showing Bond getting tortured for all those months?
Yes.
Yeah, and that was kind of cool to see. That actually tied into the actual movie, and it wasn't just scantily clad women for scantily clad women.
It wasn't just scantily clad women beating on busts and statues of
sure.
Lenin.
Yeah. Yeah. So weird.
Why?
But yeah, I like Die Another Day. You know, it's a very much turn off my brain movie, but I thought it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
I could have totally done without Halle Berry in the movie, but that's
me. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. So that's my number six. Because it brings us on to your number five.
My number five is one I would be surprised if it doesn't show up at least somewhere on Aaron's list. It is the 1974 Man with the Golden Gun, directed by Guy Hamilton. I mean, talk
my number
about.
Number three.
Yeah, I mean, Christopher
Excellent
fucking
film.
Lee. Christopher fucking Lee. Come on. He's the villain.
Yeah, I mean.
You gotta love that. He's the dude with the golden gun. And
that'd be a better title.
Yes,
the dude with the golden gun.
That's the whole new title, The Dude with the Golden Gun.
That's the reboot in 3D.
You had the midget dude. The only problem I have with the movie is the Bond girl. I didn't like Midnight, but not Midnight.
I remember.
Goodnight, whatever. Yeah. I didn't like her, but the rest of the movie's great.
I could have dealt without the whole laser portion of the plot. What the fuck was he doing?
Yeah, he's getting it was because of the energy crisis.
Yeah.
He was getting the solenoid thing.
Yeah, I didn't care about that. I liked the fact that he wanted to kill James Bond to kill James Bond because James Bond is James Bond and he wants to be better.
Sort of brings me to a point of so those of us who've read the novels,
it's horrible.
The book for Man with the Golden Gun is terrible.
Sucks.
A lot of times I find that because the books are so much different than the movies, and I find that I like the movies and hate the books and love some of the books and hate the movies. Mm-hmm. This was a case with this one. I just the Man with the Golden Gun is just a great movie. I love it. It's got all of the Bond tropes in there. It's got exotic locations. It's got an over the top villain. And it was Roger Moore's second outing as Bond, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Roger Moore, soft spot in my heart. Love the guy. So.
I do, too. Still the biggest box office disappointment out of all the James Bond movies.
Yep.
But it had a lot of good things going for it. I liked it. So.
All right. Matt, what's your number five?
Actually, I had The Man with the Golden Gun. That's, again, a classic film. Just
love it.
Good stuff all the way through. Good villain again.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I think you guys beat the hell out of it besides that. But yeah, it was a good one. So.
Yeah, I thought it was fun.
Well,
I enjoyed it.
Understand that Aaron is rather fond of Christopher Lee.
A little bit.
Just a little
bit. I can understand that. He's a hell of an actor. He does some great
He's wonderful.
Man. Just fantastic.
That's, all right. Well, I guess, Aaron, that moves us on to your number five.
I did because you know, and I'm not trying to hide behind the curtain. I accidentally deleted my list right before we're doing the show, so I'm rewriting it. I don't have years or any of that stuff. I used to have it, but my number five is, and off the top of my head, I want to say maybe 81. The Living Daylights. It was Timothy Dalton.
Not 81.
No,
Living
not
Daylights was 87, directed by John Glenn.
Yeah, there you go. The Living Daylights. I liked that
one. The first outing is Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, the first outing is Timothy Dalton. I think that both it and License to Kill are good movies.
I think they're horribly underrated.
No, I do too. I mean, I do too. And it's on the show when all the news was going on with MGM going through their bankruptcy and all that stuff, and we were yelling and screaming and, you know, get past this crap because we don't want to lose more of
We don't want another 8 years between James Bond movies,
and we don't want to we don't want to lose more Daniel Craig, and that's exactly what happened. I feel cheated that we lost what we did out of Timothy Dalton, because I really liked what he gave us.
People would give Timothy Dalton a lot of grief, and I thought he did a great job.
Who does?
There are fans out there that can't stand the guy.
People don't like anything.
His movies are really underrated, I thought. I mean, Living Daylights is a much more classic, quote-unquote, James Bond film than, say, License to Kill. It's still great. And, yeah, Living Daylights is number 7 on my list.
It's my number 5, so.
I love it. It's a great movie.
Cool.
Horribly, horribly underrated.
Very good. So what's your number 5?
My number 4.
4, Ethan.
My number 4 was long time my favorite James Bond movie of all time, and as a kid it was my favorite James Bond movie to watch. It's the 1977, directed by Lewis Gilbert, The Spy Who Loved Me. You know, and I know things about it now that are kind of interesting, you know, that it's I've read The Spy Who Loved Me book and it's terrible.
That's my number 7.
The Spy Who Loved Me was the first quote unquote original James Bond movie where they wrote a whole new plot for it and everything and just used the title. I mean, come on, it's got introduces the great henchman Jaws to the James Bond mythos, and you have the undersea world. You got boats that swallow submarines, and I personally love the whole scene in the latter half of the movie with Bond and the British and American sailors all taking the ship and all that. I mean, this is great stuff. I love that movie. It's A Spy Who Loved Me. It's again, you know, my soft spot for Roger Moore. So.
Yeah, that was my number 3, actually. I agree with you.
Excellent. Oh, good one. Very good one.
I love it. I love it. Well, what's your number 4, Matt?
Live and Let Die, which I just really enjoyed. I mean, I'm a big fan of voodoo and things of the Caribbean in the first place.
Roger Moore's
a lot of fun to watch the movie. Mr. Big is just a great villain, which, you know, he turns out to be Dr. Kananga, but of course. But just a ton of fun to be able to fix, you know, that modern spy stuff with this ancient voodoo religion thing going through the whole bit, and with a Caribbean flavor all through it, too. I really got a kick out of the whole film.
Also features one of the only two actors to play Felix Leiter twice. Was in that movie as well. So I can't remember the actor's name off the top of my head, but that was Roger Moore's first outing, and there was a severe lack of gadgetry in it.
That's true. And actually, Felix is one of my favorite characters in the novels. Mm-hmm. He's one of the CIA liaison.
Yeah.
He doesn't really do a whole lot in the films, unfortunately, but back then in the books, he was great.
Yeah. I love that one. That one's great. Just barely didn't make my list, but I do enjoy that one.
And this is Live and Let Die?
Live and Let Die.
It's my number 9.
Yes.
Yeah. I like it. I like that one because it's a departure of everything that we've seen before it. In so much as, you know, it's taking place with like this weird voodoo thing.
Well, and not even that. The beginning part of it sort of feels like James Bond is accidentally fallen into a blaxploitation movie.
Yeah.
To see James Bond walking down the street and John Shaft to go by.
Which would have been awesome.
Yeah, which would have been funny. And that's what you sort of expect off the first part of the movie, and it does its first run as Roger Moore after Sean Connery left the series for the second time, and I love it. This is a good one. Aaron, what's your number 4?
My number 4 is actually License to Kill.
It's my number 10.
It's coming down to Timothy Dalton. I just really enjoyed that performance. I can't really put a finger on it why I liked it better than Living Daylights, but man, did I ever. I don't know. Something about that villain. Robert Davi.
Robert Davi.
Yeah, Robert Davi was the villain.
He's
in that
wonderful
one.
In that.
He was, and you know, he had a nice brutal murder. I mean, I'm not going to say death because, you know, Bond murdered his ass at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Yes. There's that car chase.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, it's and
wonderful
it's
performance.
The reintroduction of the ass, or it's not the reintroduction of the ass, but that was in Living Daylights, yeah. Right? But it had Benicio del Toro in it as one of the Bond as the henchman.
Yeah,
know?
And he fell through a wood chipper.
Yeah, definitely.
He
did. Cool.
It was awesome.
Well, it wasn't really a wood chipper.
It was a Benicio del Toro chipper. It was like spinning blades that were there for no other reason than for him to fall through.
I mean, well, they were putting keys of coke through right. It. It's like, now it's there for someone to be thrown through.
Yeah. Really. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy the Timothy Dalton.
Not to mention Wayne Newton.
Yeah, Wayne Newton is in that, and he was like the weird David Koresh, Branch Davidian kind of religious leader guy, which was strange. But it was worked, which should scare Wayne Newton a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It's a great movie.
But I really rather...
And oddly, it actually took elements of that movie were taken from the novel of Live and Let Die, with Felix getting munched on by a shark.
Yeah, one of the other things I love about Live and Let Die is I think it probably had the best theme song for any Bond film.
Oh, yeah.
The McCartney song. Just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great song. I disagree with you, though. I like Nobody Does It Better the best.
That is a great
one. Fantastic song.
That's The Spy Who Loved Me. Yeah, I mean, we could just do our top 10 Bond themes, really.
Yeah, not really. I like about three of them. You know, other than that, they're kind of hokey.
Yeah, Diamonds Are Forever was Shirley Bassey, though. Come on. You know?
That's
can't
true.
Beat that either.
That's true.
Goldfinger's a classic. But yeah, right, but yeah, yeah. I like Live and Let Die, and it's very much based off of my enjoyment of Timothy Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
So
we'll get to my number three, right?
Mm-hmm.
My number three is I really when I made this list I guess I didn't really realize how much of an original Connery fan I am, but mine's the 1965 Thunderball, directed by Terrence Young. So
that one it just doesn't do it for me, and that is the one that we had this fucking argument last time.
Sure.
That's the one that takes place largely underwater. I know they all end up on a fucking boat, but that's the one that takes place largely underwater, right?
Yes,
I just don't like that one very much, and it's just it's because of all that silence. And I mean, it's interesting, but it gets old.
Sure.
And, you know, it just sucks.
I do believe it's sort of the first time, although I guess you could really argue it with Thunderball or with Goldfinger, that it's the first time that Bond saves the world type of thing.
I have to give Thunderball this distinction. It's one of those things that just cracks me the fuck up about this franchise, and it shows its age.
Uh-huh.
The Bond gadget in that movie was the underwater camera, which is something you can buy at a convenience store now for $1.98.
Yes, it's disposable.
Yeah, it's disposable and digital, and you know, you could throw it in a volcano too. So I mean, it's just that one didn't do it for me, but you know, it's
sure.
It's because I suck and Ethan's awesome or whatever. I bet.
Well, we all knew that.
Yeah.
All righty. And now, Matt, you said your number three was which one was
The Spy Who Loved Me.
The Spy Who Loved Me. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see.
My number three was also named already.
What was your number three, Aaron?
It was Man with the Golden Gun. I brought it up earlier.
There you go. All right. So I guess we're just jumping straight to my number two then.
Yes, sir.
You knew it was coming up on the list, 1964 Goldfinger.
Yeah. I didn't think it would be that high. I actually thought something else would be your number two.
I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Goldfinger, got directed by Guy Hamilton, 1964, really sort of set the bar for what James Bond movies were.
Mm-hmm.
The first two movies were sort of trying to figure it out, you know. Third one is like, yeah, we got it. And you get such a great movie like Goldfinger with the perfect Bond villain and just... This perfect henchman and this really outlandish plot, and you know, it's just a great movie. I love Goldfinger. Matt, what's your number two?
Moonraker, believe it or not, that was about when I was a kid when it just really hit me to be watching the James Bond movies. It's gloriously stupid in so many different areas, right?
That is very true.
Although it's one of the
bits it has with Jaws are fantastic. I mean, Jaws, it was probably the greatest Bond henchman of all time, maybe except for Oddjob, right?
And it's arguably one of the best books.
Yes, true.
I actually did like that book.
But I mean, the whole idea of Bond having sex in space with Holly Goodhead, and the the fact that we actually were going into space and going to the moon back in those days too,
right,
was kind of cool. So
It was entirely a let's put this one out for Star Wars, because I know at the end of
that's why it was made.
Yes, Spy Who Loved Me. Yes, it was definitely supposed to be For Your Eyes Only was next, and yeah, I can't say Moonraker made anywhere near my top 10.
It would be like my.
I admit this is more because of the age at which I saw it. I think more than anything else.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, no problem. It's it's got a soft spot in your heart. We understand. We dig it.
Yes. Maybe in my head too. I'm not sure.
Awesome.
Well, Aaron, what's your number two?
Would it be my number two already? My number two is the 1963 From Russia with Love. And
what's a good one?
It's a great one, and I just have to disagree with the statement you made earlier that they were still figuring things out, and which led into the wonderfulness of Goldfinger, which is a fantastic movie. Don't get me wrong. God, I would have loved it if these 20 movies had followed that path that got set up by that movie, because that movie's a really interesting, down and dirty, gritty.
As another,
I think Red Grant is the best.
Red Grant's awesome.
I think he's the best henchman.
I mean, I believe he was on my top six villains list.
He was on mine too. So, yeah. But we had that argument last time around, and we're not going to do it again.
Sure.
But I think he is the best henchman. Whether he's a henchman or a villain, we're not going to get into. But fantastic villain, great fight. It's a fantastic movie. I really dug it.
Sure.
Really dug it.
Go back and watch it again. It's I'm probably just underrating it myself. So
possibly. And I feel that way about Dr. No. I can confidently say I've seen Dr. No twice. Mm-hmm. I've probably seen From Russia with Love, five times, something like that. And I really enjoyed it. Great movie. And I really like the fight between Bond and Grant at the end when he ends up choking him out. First gizmos in a Bond movie, with the attaché case.
The attaché case.
It made a lot more sense than a laser Rolex or a remote control Aston Martin. And I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was a lot of fun. So it's my number two.
All right. Well, I guess then we're to my number one. Mm-hmm. It's really not going to be any surprise. My number one's 2006, directed by Martin Campbell, Casino Royale. I love that movie. It's
my number one too.
I was so terrified of them rebooting the franchise.
And it's my number one as well.
Hey, we have our first.
What do you know?
We have our first ever unanimous.
It's only
number
took 54
one.
Shows.
Yeah. Just jump on in. Really,
it's a great movie. There's so much you could have done to screw this thing up.
Oh,
it was a reboot. You hadn't had a movie out for 4 years before that. Craig was pretty much an unknown at the time to most people, and they just. To take it all back and go right down to the ground level and turn him back into that serious character that he started out as, make him somebody who can still fuck things up, to make him vulnerable and younger and still angry at the villains and such, as opposed to just being cool about it. Great, great reboot.
And it had a lot of silly moments in it that could have just fucked the movie up, but it was just handled well. Like that crap about, I'm worth the money, every penny of it. I mean, that could have been really stupid. Or my favorite, I have lots of favorite moments in that movie. Probably my favorite line in it was, I want a vodka martini. You want to shake it or stir it? Does it look like I give a damn? Great line, I think I said it once again on when we did this before. Favorite scene is, obviously the, what's that shit? The parkour chase at the beginning of it. I mean, it absolutely characterizes Bond the way he needs to be.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, it went back to making Bond, actually gave Bond, one, some vulnerabilities, and two, it made him a character again instead of this icon. I mean, for me, that movie gave him, gave the character some purpose and some good background to him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in, like previous movies, Bond, when he first started out with Sean Connery, it's like, yes, he's a spy, he does this job, and he quickly evolved into, well, it sort of seems like he's a spy in his spare time. It's his weekend gig. And, Roger Moore sort of continued that, and then the first real person to sort of touch on this, no, he's a trained killer, he's a spy, was Timothy Dalton, whose time got cut short, obviously. Right. And then they brought in Brosnan, thank you. Pierce Brosnan, and he sort of went back to being this invulnerable. They attempted in GoldenEye to show some vulnerability, but failed miserably. I mean, sort of that's a great. Actually, it's both directed by the same guy, GoldenEye and Casino Royale, where they try to show this vulnerability, whereas in GoldenEye they fail.
Now we don't want to start any crap with you, but Ethan and I are famous haters of GoldenEye. GoldenEye. Ooh, it's an awful James Bond movie.
It's one of those that I've tried to like.
Definitely a better video game than it was.
Oh yeah.
And that is so sad. But you know, you have same director, same character, and really it just goes to we know Brosnan can pull off good a good actor, but you have this in Casino Royale is they brought James Bond back to being a this is my job, I do, you know, I'm here to fulfill this mission to do this, and what happens in between happens in between, but my goal is this. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, you know, sort of had this. Well, Bond is really just, I'm here to do this job, but you know what? I'm going to go out with these ladies first and, you know, ha ha ha, and be all this suave and debonair. Whereas Daniel Craig sort of brought this visceral attitude of, no, I'm here to get that guy over there. And I don't care who gets in my way. I'm going to go get him.
Really going to hurt when I catch him.
Exactly.
I know he might get hit by a car on the way over, but I would believe that Daniel Craig Bond would crawl up out of the gutter and continue on going.
You have to believe that because of the way that, you know, that he portrays that character. It's just I cannot stress enough how much I love the scene when he does chase down that dude in the beginning of it, and he has the thing from him that he wants, and all the people have the guns on him. He's like, well, hell, I don't need that guy anymore. So he just shoots him, and then shoots the propane tank and blows it up, and goes. I mean, that is like the cold, visceral, bloodthirsty James Bond that I've always wanted, and I think that Casino Royale is my number one because, and I'm going to say this really delicately, is that I don't particularly like James Bond movies. I understand that they have a place in history, and I understand that, you know that they can be an awful lot of fun, but, you know, they're just not really my cup of tea, and I had never been excited about a James Bond movie in my life, not once when it was coming out, and Casino Royale was no different. I saw it because I see movies, and it made me excited for the future of this franchise. Such a dynamic performance by Daniel Craig. I'm screwing myself for a future show. I don't care. This has got to be probably not only my favorite James Bond movie, but probably the best reboot ever made. I mean, it is just such a great, great movie that very well could have blown up in their faces, but didn't. And, you know, we're reaping the benefits because fantastic movie. And God, I was just thinking about this today because I wanted something to say about it. And do you remember the bullshit around Daniel Craig getting cast and how much everybody hated it? Do you remember how quickly that went away after that movie came out?
I mean, speaking from my point of view, you know, I didn't care about Daniel Craig.
I thought it would work.
I mean, I heard things like they were replacing Baccarat with Texas Hold'em Poker and was a little pissed off. And then, you know, I sort of calmed down as that. And the original Casino Royale book I didn't like too much.
I like the movie. I like the farce one. I mean, it's stupid, but I like it. It had its funny moments.
And you know, the movie came out, and I was just like floored.
Yeah,
it was just so good.
Awesome. I was sold in the first scene. Like that black and white scene in the bathroom when they actually made the gun thing make sense for the first fucking time ever. You know, I mean, that was fantastic. Such a great movie. Such a great movie.
Yeah, and you can really buy Craig as a Bond that's vulnerable, but who can still kick ass.
The poker parts were great, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to make a card game exciting on film, right? Especially when you get all these other options you can use in a James Bond movie. But they did a hell of a job of it. I mean, they not only turned into a game that you were following, but the character turns it in, you know, outwitting people. It was really well done.
Yeah, love it, love it. So I guess we need to give our rundowns, eh?
I guess so.
All right. Well, starting at the top of my list, my number 10 was License to Kill, 1989. Number 9 is Octopussy from 1983.
I didn't think you liked Octopussy.
I loved Octopussy.
Huh. What do you say, Shay?
My number 8 is Quantum of Solace, 2008, directed by Mark Forster. Number 7 is The Living Daylights. Number 6, Dr. No. Number 5, The Man with the Golden Gun. Number 4, The Spy Who Loved Me. Number 3, Thunderball. Number 2, Goldfinger. And number 1, Casino Royale.
Cool. I guess that brings me on to my number 10. well, my list. My number 10 is Quantum of Solace. My number 9 is Live and Let Die. My number 8 is A Spy Who Loved Me. Number 7 is Goldfinger. My number 6 is Die Another Day. My number 4 number 4 is Living Daylights. Excuse me. My number 5 is Living Daylights. My number 4 is License to Kill. My number 3 is The Man with the Golden Gun. My number 2 is From Russia with Love. My favorite James Bond movie of all time is Casino Royale. And what do you think? What's your list?
All right. For me, number 10 was On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Number 9 was You Only Live Twice. Number 7 was For Your Eyes Only. Did I skip one? Number 8 I skipped, which was... Dr. No. 6 was Goldfinger. 5 was The Man with the Golden Gun. 4 was Live and Let Die. 3 was The Spy Who Loved Me. 2 was Moonraker, and of course, number 1 was Casino Royale.
Very good. I'm amazed that we actually had unanimous number 1.
Yes.
I mean, sometimes Ethan and I agree on a number 1, but we've never had all 3 people agree. Not
I think it
once.
Says something about the film, huh?
Oh, yeah.
I think so, or, you know.
Yes, if you're not a Bond film and you haven't seen Casino Royale, if you're not a Bond fan,
and you haven't
just check out Casino Royale.
It's such a good movie.
Yes.
Such a good, I mean, fuck it being a Bond movie. It's just a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a great movie.
If we can get a movie of that caliber for Green Lantern, I'm going to be happy.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome.
But I'm still worried.
I'm worried, too. But I was worried about Casino Royale, so
sure,
that matter.
That's true.
So here's hoping.
Yes.
But, yeah, I guess that's going to bring it into our top 6 segment. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with our outro section.
Give me more whiskey. Give me a little more booze. But I sure can lose. I don't remember just what you said. I only know that you said it in bed. God damn it, honey, what am I to think? Yes, I'll just sit around you and drink. There's only one thing I can do. I have to do it, baby. I have to see it through. I'm gonna stop loving you. I'm gonna stop loving you, baby. I'm gonna do what's good for me. Not what's good for you. And stop loving you.
What's good for you and stop.
and day. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna stop loving you, babe. I'm gonna do what's good for me, not what's good for you, and stop loving you.
We just had our 54th show, and we talked about the James Bond film franchise as a whole. We talked about the franchise as a whole, and then we went over our top 10 favorite of the James Bond films, and had a historic first ever unanimous number one. All three of us agreed that Casino Royale was the best of the James Bond movies, which I'm sure if anybody ever hears this, they're going to tear their hair out, because, oh my god, it's better than Goldfinger, you're full of shit, and fuck that. Yeah. I think it's a better movie. It's a more exciting movie. It's got me excited for the future, so very cool. This was Matt's choice, so thank you very much for being on the show tonight, Matt. Now, we always give everybody a little time throughout the outro segment here where we give you the opportunity to pimp out anything they want. Is there anything you want people to buy out there, Matt?
Buy all my stuff.
All of it?
Well, you know, it's a lot of stuff, so it might depend on your budget. But the two things I'm really pushing these days, I had two original novels come out this year. The first is one called Immortals, which is a science fiction novel about a guy who's the world's oldest Secret Service agent, kind of a James Bond for the future.
Nice.
And he wakes up about 150 years from now and realizes that he's been killed, he's been murdered, and his murder has been broadcast on the internet. And now he has to figure out who killed him because he can't remember anything for the last 6 months. And it's his job to go out and solve his own murder and then figure out what happens from there. That's got a lot of great reviews. That's from Angry Robot Books that published that. They also published my second original novel, which is called Vegas Nights with a K. And that's an original urban fantasy novel where you have a couple of college freshmen who go to Vegas on spring break. And they've learned a little bit of magic. And they decide that they're going to use that to clean up the tables playing blackjack. So essentially it's a cross between, if you ever heard of the MIT card counting teams and the Dresden Files, right? So they go in there, they try to clean up the tables, they make a little bit of money. Then they realize that they are far from the first people to ever have thought of this idea, and they're in some serious shit because of it.
Yeah.
And it all spirals out of control from there. I also had another book just come out this month, actually, called Star Wars versus Star Trek from Adams Media. And that's a book that basically takes the two biggest science fiction franchises ever and pits different characters and technology and everything else in the entire series against each other to see which is the superior of them all. So, and I won't tell you who it is. You got to read the book to figure it out. It's a close contest, though. I had a ball writing it. And you know, it's spelled under humor. So
we did like 17 sci-fi shows, and a Star Trek film never showed up on any of those lists, did it?
Really?
Yeah, I don't think it did.
I don't think it did.
Not even the Wrath of Khan.
Wrath of Khan.
I'm a Star Trek fan. I don't consider myself a Trekkie, mind you. I do. I love Star Trek, but I also love Star Wars. And I'm thinking with this book that you just wrote, you've started about a million flame wars on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's just pretty much diving right into it. I'm gonna basically set the fire and then run away.
That's the way to do it.
That is the way to go.
That is the way to do it.
I've got another book coming out called Extreme Facts from IDW, which is for young adult set, you know, teens and tweens, about crazy records that people have established over the years. It's heavily illustrated. I just had a story come out in G.I. Joe Tales of the Cobra Wars, also from IDW, which is prose stories about the characters from G.I. Joe. I did a little bit of work for Conduit 2, which is a new video game for the Wii that came out. And they just announced yesterday, Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Online, which I spent a couple weeks in Singapore working on some writing for that. And that's about it for now. Also, I have a movie I worked on is coming out later this year called Inspectors, and it's based on Jared Sorensen's RPG of the same name.
Oh, yeah, they made a movie off of that, eh?
Yeah, well, we did a low-budget horror
flick out of it. Okay.
Called Slacker Ghostbusters is the idea behind it. So.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. It's a funny movie. It's got some really brilliant spots in it, some good acting. Cool. I actually show up as a zombie in the opening reel, which is kind of fun.
Right nice. On. Got to do the whole zombie makeup
thing. I'll have to try to track that down and check it out.
We'll be doing some previews at Gen Con.
I will be there.
I'm not sure exactly how much left to show up. And then we'll be doing the full-on later on in the year.
Cool. Well, I'll be at Gen Con, so hopefully I'll be able to catch some of that.
I'll be at Gen Con. I'm going to guest honor again this year. Been for like the last 8 or 9 years, and this will be my 30th Gen Con in a row. So I just love the show.
Excellent. We'll try. We should try to run into each other at least once.
That'd be fantastic. I love it. That's Gen Con is my favorite time of year. It's like Christmas in August, except the last 5 days.
Yes. Perfect. It's wonderful. It's my vacation from the world, too.
So it's almost like Hanukkah in August.
Yeah, exactly.
Minus 3 days. But hey, it's better than one.
It's
Geekonica. Yeah.
Yes, and we only need 5 days.
We only need 5 days, damn it. Awesome.
Because we can't afford any more.
New way.
At Gen Con, yeah.
I think it's expensive, is what I understand it.
And I think that's about enough. That's enough for me to pitch for one show, I'm sure. So that's
excellent, excellent. Well, next week we've got we're going to be joined by none other than one of the designers of 3rd edition D&D himself, Monty Cook.
Oh yeah,
who's going to be talking time travel movies?
That should be fun.
Yes, yes.
Time Cop.
Yes, yes. When are we going to get Time Cop on the list? Yes. We might be able to work a Star Trek movie in there. They do time travel.
That's
Star
true.
Trek 4.
Yes. The new one.
Yeah, the new
one. The new
one.
The new time reboot travel. Did a lot of time travel, too, actually.
That's another good reboot.
Yeah. So, yeah. So next week we are going to be joined by Monty Cook talking time travel. So, do tune in next week, I suppose. Is there anything else we need to hit, really?
I can't think of anything at all.
All righty. Well, I guess I'm Ethan.
Well, I'm Aaron. Let your geek flag fly.